Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg, and we've got the British Caribbean or British Virgin Islands. Is that where you're? It's in the Caribbean,
yeah,
so right?
Yes, yes. Yeah. Sir Richard Branson was waving to us. Not really, but you know, we sailed around his island.
Yeah, okay. So Kirk Gray is on the line. So welcome back, Kirk, to the show. And
thanks, Fred.
Do you have your land legs now? You're all set?
I'm starting to. It's hard to leave that paradise and come back to the reality of home, but it's beautiful here, and it was great seeing the mountains and being back at 5,000 feet above where I was just last week.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's this, the change in altitude and lack of oxygen probably make you feel giddy.
Yeah, I was getting way too much oxygen down there at sea level.
Yeah, you know, that stuff will corrode you. You know, that oxygen's pretty bad.
Yeah, I've heard it oxidizes things.
That's right. Yeah. That's what it does. So one of the questions, I mean, we talked about it in our last episode, that you dropped your GoPro, right? And the whole idea, if something fails over a specification, if it's at the technical limit of the material set that you're dealing with, well, it's a redesign then. Different technologies needed to make it better, more robust. And sometimes that's the right thing to do from what you learn. And other times it's not. There's other things that you should be addressing and fixing. But the related question that I've heard just occasionally is somebody sits back and they think about, well, instead of finding what fails and determining these operating destruct limits and technical limits, what if we just made the specification to our designers bigger? You know, instead of say 100 feet for this GoPro water depth, and we're making up that specification because we haven't determined right. What it actually is, is maybe we don't put it on the side of the box that we sell consumers, but internally we have a product requirements document. We could say, well, you need to design it to 1,000 feet. And then if we just test it to spec and it passes at 1,000 feet, do we really even need to do hull testing? So we could avoid testing by just designing to a more stringent specification. It's kind of the logic I've heard a few times.
Right. Why not build it or specify it? And especially when it comes to solid state electronics, not mechanics, this may be relevant too, that a lot of the capability is already in the standard components. I mean, it's actually, we don't know really what the margin is, because the manufacturer always produces the components with margin in it to be allowed to manufacture, have a yield out of their manufacturing process. In other words, have some capability to allow for the variation that manufacturing will have.
Well, I don't know about that, Kirk. I know what you're talking about is, I think the way I learned about it was Kellogg's filling up cornflakes in a box. And inside of the box, it says there's 12 ounces of cornflakes in the box.
Right.
Well, they know they've got some variability in their filling machine that weighs and measures. There's measurement error and timing errors, all kinds of things. So they figure out what the distribution is of their equipment, their capability, and it goes, maybe it's plus or minus a half a ounce. Uh-huh. And so they set the dial to always do like 12 and a half ounces, so that even if it's on the low end of their capability of the light load, it still meets the advertised requirement. Now, that's one way you think of it. Another way to think of it is, I'm drawing complete blank. The mind is a terrible thing to waste. I just.
Well, They err on the side of it being too full having more weight than necessary.
Right. So the other one, Kirk, is when you, especially in electronics, is like they're making resistors, for example.
Right. Right.
And they'll make a thousand resistors, and then they measure every one of them, and they say, oh, right, this one's real close to the 100 ohms that we're selling, so we're going to charge more for this as a 1% tolerance resistor, a precision right resistor. And then this one's a little further away, so we're going to not charge as much for that. So they bin the products. They measure it and bin it,
mm-hmm,
right? And then they – so some of those are dependent on what characteristic they're measuring. Some will be, you know, they're very uniform distribution because they're sorted.
Right.
Rather than we set it, we understand the distribution and then we build in some margin to account for variability. Sometimes they use that variability to sort their products. They make a bunch of capacitors and they go, all right, this one's at 10 picofarads, this one's at 18 picofarads, this one's at 32 right picofarads. And they, you know, it's after the fact that they sort it and then they put the label right on.
Because they can't control the process. That's certainly true in CPU manufacturing or fabrication.
Yeah, the speeds. The speed of the CPU,
right.
Yeah.
They cannot make a consistent, you know, 3.4 gigahertz processor. They have to test each one to with some algorithms to verify that, you know, oh, yeah, this one is good to up to this 30, you know, you can run it slower, but it's up to good to 3.2. This other one's up to 3.8, you know, and so then they can bin them, like you say, and sell them at higher cost.
Right. Well, that whole discussion, though, is different than what we're talking about with Hall testing, where we're right saying we want a more robust product.
Why not have a higher design spec, in other words? Why not have the engineers design it? Because that may add cost where there's no cost, that there's a sufficient strength in that component, that subassembly, whatever, that you may not need. And it depends on what the criteria you're using to design, you know, a higher level higher spec.
Like temperature, if we set too high of a requirement for where an electronic system could be used, we may have to go to ceramic, circuit boards instead of phenolics because the degradation of the phenolic is too high. Even though the application is fine with the FR4, the phenolic based fiberglass based circuit boards. If we set the spec artificially high, right, we may
you're
be forced
adding
into
cost.
Adding cost and complications we don't really need.
Right. And again, you have a lot of margin in standard materials and product standard materials that when you finally get the assembly together, when you finish the system or a larger assembly, that it may be that the assembly as a whole has significant margin to it. I've seen this when you've tested a product, put a product in a halt test, and it, you know, a typical power supply may be able to go to 130°C, and that's kind of a fundamental limit of technology for me for that particular type of technology, mm-hmm, and no changes are necessary. But yet you have a product that you can screen at a very high level of stress, which makes for a very short stress cycle, mm-hmm, if you have a HASS process.
Right.
So there are many advantages to having the margins, but until you actually find limits, you don't really know what kind of margin you have. And all the manufacturers put in margin, but they're not consistent. Different component manufacturers, some may feel safe with a 10% or 15%. Some actually manufacture one line of components, like you said, and maybe bend them. And the components themselves, or they have to sell. They have a shortage of a certain component, okay, and they actually sell you a product that's more capable than it is in its specifications because they don't have the lower specified units. And if it's inexpensive and there's not a big cost difference,
ship the ones that meet
Intel
your needs
may,
and they're good.
Yeah. And Intel may send you a higher capability processor to meet a lower, like they may send you an actual one that's 3.6 gigahertz capable when they don't have enough 3.2 processors to send you. They've run out of them, so they mm-hmm. send you from a higher cost bin just because they got to fill the order. And so anyway, there's just no way of knowing exactly what the margin is in the product and how much margin you have, especially in assemblies when you're talking about interactive between components. I mean, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. part of it. It's just a lot more than the actual component itself. There's the traces, the solder, the FR4, the phenolic material that you're the circuit board you're building it on. And I've run those for long periods of time at well above, you know, the specification of the board, and they have been quite capable of surviving that. And mm-hmm. again, it's, you know, up to the manufacturer to do. If they really wanted to find out, they would have to run these things for long periods of times at exceeding temperatures, and they just don't have the time and money to do that, nor do they want to push that or have the customer believe that these are all going to be that capable or run the risk of that.
Well, yeah, well, there's lots of variety of business reasons and so on, but I'm thinking of internally. Is there a case where you would change the internal requirements or specifications? I'm thinking drop testing in particular, or like the water damage to smartphones.
Yeah. I mean,
it used to be very minimal water susceptible. I mean, it might be none.
if
it gets wet, it's your fault as a customer. So the designers didn't have to worry about it. Whereas now there's a requirement. But are there cases where it makes sense to in order to get a more robust product? I mean, you could take your existing product and use HALT to explore where the weaknesses are and then iterate, right? You improve the weaknesses and make your product more robust.
Right.
In other cases, like water, we knew that the previous generations of smartphones were not water resistant. If you got them wet, you pretty much lost it.
Right.
And now that requirement has changed. Now, the customer's requirement has always been there. Now our expectation is I can wash my hands and pick up my phone and not worry about it. But I should be able to drop it in a swimming pool versus the ocean.
Well,
because I can get it back quicker.
Right, right. And no, as technology changes, the specs are going to get higher, or they're going to be increased. For instance, that, you know, you couldn't, I mean, when smartphones were first produced, they were not water resistant hardly at all, but they did have some kind of spec that they could be, you know, rained on or sweated on without failing. Okay. Mm-hmm. They had some moisture resistance, to some degree. But as technology came about, we got Bluetooth capable headphones. And again, it allowed us to make a more robust phone, so a water-resistant phone, because you could remove one of the ports, the little 13 millimeter headphone jack, or mm-hmm. I don't know what the size is, but the standard headphone jack. And now, you know, you made a more robust, but that technology didn't exist. Bluetooth headphones and headsets did not exist back, you know, a few years ago. So the technology allows, again, to increase those specs as the materials or the knowledge base of what causes the failures and what's most irritating to the consumer mm-hmm. start to be, come from the field. And technology allows better seals. Technology allows better.
So let's go back to the primary question here, though, is if somebody comes to you and says, well, we're just going to increase the specs that we have to design to make it more robust. And in one regard, we're going to eliminate the need to do HALT and destroy these products. I mean, it's kind of, I don't know if that's a good economy or not. The primary thing I heard you talk about, and I agree, is that it's going to add cost where you may or may not really need it, likely not need
right.
it, and unless
right.
you're very deliberate, very knowledgeable about where the minimum margins are, in which
right.
case you're probably doing HALT or something similar anyway. But beyond
right.
cost, why would we not want to increase the specs? And specifically, I'm thinking of drop testing. We rarely know how many times a handheld device is going to be dropped by any particular customer.
Right.
Right. So we have a lot of uncertainty about the use conditions. And right now, the like a standard specification out of a standards body like IEC or ASTM or ISO or whoever is a drop test is typically, 10 drops from 3 feet on different angles or something like that. It's pretty minimal, in my opinion.
It is, right.
Right. So I've seen it where people will say, well, we're going to double that, right? We're going to go higher, or we're going to do a higher number of drops, higher distance, we're going to, I even saw one where they were shooting it out of air cannons to get the velocity without having to take a, cut a hole in the roof.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. That's valid.
But that was become a spec. And is that related to making the product more robust, or is that a surrogate for doing halt testing, or is it, what, is there a reason that they do that?
Well, I think, again, they raise the stress level to the point that it breaks. That's what we do. That's what halts, basically, that's halt. Mm-hmm. And so that we have an endpoint. We have a real empirical, observable condition that we realize will cause failure. And so the question of whether we can make that more a higher design spec and build it more robustly or have it designed more robustly is a question of cost. That's that's the trade-off. Okay, so we know that, as you said, and especially with consumer handheld devices, and obviously the phone or the tablet is very common and is incredibly widespread, billions or whatever across the world. And we know that that they are going to be abused to a point of exceeding any kind of material expectation of survival. Okay,
you mean breaking,
right? Running it over with your car, dropping it out a 5-story window. Mm-hmm. Now, within that range, before that extreme, there is this a 6-foot drop onto a hardwood floor, something like that, that a consumer do accidentally. Okay, so it breaks it. Some consumers would say, that's my fault. Some consumers would say, wow, that's a flimsy phone, or that's a flimsy device. Mm-hmm. And who's to say where that line is for each consumer? We can't make a general saying that for all consumers will say a 6-foot drop is obviously it's their fault and it should be broken. So again, building in, you to add specs to have larger margins, you're going to increase automatically from the get-go, from the design costs, you're going to increase that cost without knowing exactly the end capability, because it's not just – I think those specs and how they do in a CAD design – would be difficult. I mean, there's some modeling that can be done as far as the shocks, and I think the multi-physics capability of some CAD programs and things like that would allow to some perception, but we all know that reality has little permutations and variations that can't be completely addressed in a modeling program.
I think you touched on one point, though, that was, I think, I want to amplify a little bit.
Okay.
Is that the customer's expectations is really what sets that boundary. Is it, do you have the right specifications or not? And so I think the specifications need to reflect what's susceptible to the customer. And that's going to be either studied or guessed or looking at your failure rates and what's causing customers to, physically return products or do warranty claims or whatever.
Right.
But one of the things I've often said, though, is that customers are going to find new and exciting ways to abuse your products or use your products.
Right.
But as that evolves, as that changes, it's part of our role is to understand that. And then it may involve changing the specifications. It may involve getting innovative and moving to new materials or new types of designs to minimize or mitigate issues and make it more robust. I think it's part, if the specifications are reflecting our targets for the design process as a reflection of what customers are expected to use our products, and mm-hmm. and build in some margin to account for variability, and both in the manufacturing processes and material sets, and also in the way customers use it, because they're going to continue to drop it from higher distances and and expect it to be okay.
Well, one of the things, and sometimes let's look at specs and what companies do as far as setting specifications. Now, I know Apple, and I put this in my book, which I'll just mention briefly. It's Next Generation.
You haven't mentioned it.
Robust Designs of Electronics. Yeah, I know. I've seen. So it's always to show notes, but I'll put it up there. Anyway, one of the things I think is a little bit silly is that Apple's specification for their iPhone has been, they may have moved away from this for iPhone 7, but they've specified the maximum use temperature for the iPhone was 35 degrees centigrade. Now, we don't here in the United States use that, but that it comes out to 90 degrees, I believe, Fahrenheit. Or 92, and of course our body is at 98.6. So if you had an iPhone in your pocket, you're exceeding the manufacturer's spec.
Only if you use it.
If you pull it out and it's still at 37 degrees, which is body temperature, and their spec is 35. Now, are they going to cause that? You know, every consumer would say that's ridiculous, and it is.
Well, I wouldn't use the body, you know, in your pocket or in your hand kind of thing, because that's going to still be lower than the 97, 99.
But if
whatever.
You're in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're outdoor, you can't use that phone.
If you're in New Delhi or
in Summit.
Even when you're on your yacht, I'm sure you had some warm days that got up into the upper 30s or low 40s Celsius range.
Maybe, yeah. Right. But those places exist on Earth and, you know, as a normal temperature. So for a phone, a portable phone, a smartphone, not to be or saying that that exceeds, those environments exceed the spec of the phone.
No,
I don't understand.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother game, and it's outside the realm of reliability is specsmanship of what do you put on the side of the box? What do you make claims? You know, so like warranty, what was it? One of the Korean manufacturers, I don't remember which company it was, came out with the 10-year bumper to bumper warranty, which nobody else had. Everybody else was a 3 to 5 years. So they said, we're going to improve our image by standing by our product longer. Now that's,
and I'm all for that.
Yeah. Well, that's all different than what does your product actually do and how do you design it? But that increasing the expectation put pressure on making a more durable product. So they, as a corporate strategy, said, we're going to increase our specs. We're going to make a more robust product. And they did. Right. I mean, and now the rest of the industry pretty much has followed. But the idea of changing the specifications to make a more robust product so you can, quote, air quotes here, pass halt is pointless. Right.
I agree.
Those are really unrelated. If connect your specs to what your customers' environment and use conditions are so that you can design a product that meets or exceeds their expectations.
And realize that you have some you don't have all the information of how the worst case environments.
That's right. And we never
customers
will.
May use.
Yeah.
And we never will.
We never will. But then the types of the testing we do, including HALT, is a way for us to help meet this customer's expectations. Is we're not setting specifications to pass our verification testing. I mean, in that case, make all your specs really simple and low, and you could pass everything and ship it. I think the key point is connect the specs to the customer's expectations. And you made that point, and I wanted to stress that one a little bit. Cool. Well, how are you going to go? I mean, now that come back to reality, and you lost your GoPro in the Caribbean Sea. Some point that if somebody's heading that way, you can let them know where it is. But what are you going to go destroy next?
Well, I somehow we destroyed two coffee makers just within a 2-week period. or they wore out. Who knows?
Are you got them on your bench yet? Are you going to take them apart?
Yeah, I've got my it's a future product, future failure analysis. But
we'll have to come back and ask you about that.
Yeah, we'll see if I get through that. But they gave a long life. We're happy with their service. I'm real surprised the Keurig machine failed. It's had a fairly short life, but it's got a little motor that I think, you know, mechanics will fail. So anyway, but I don't know what happens next. We'll certainly investigate it.
Yeah, okay, cool. Well, thanks, Kirk. And we'll open it up here. If you've had a coffee maker fail recently, maybe you and Kirk can get together and do some FA work. But more importantly, get over to reliability.fm. And there's plenty of ways you can get in touch with us. Let us know what you think. Are we meeting your expectations, or should we change our specifications, or to use the theme of the show? But yeah, we'd love to hear from you. A little bit of feedback would go a long way. And the comments that we've been hearing over the last few months have been very encouraging. And we certainly appreciate the support for people that have been sharing the show and encouraging other people to listen. Actually, Kirk, the other day I heard that this guy had some friends over. They were working in the garage on some car, and they were playing our podcast in background on the shop speaker system. Yeah, and he said that his friends were like, "Oh, this show's pretty cool. I like that." So sent us a note saying, that here's how we're listening to it, and these guys thought it was pretty good. So we appreciate stuff like that.
Thanks for forwarding the comments to the reliability the people that
the co-hosts.
Great. We love hearing that. And even the negative, that's negative feedback really helps us improve things.
That's right.
Positive, we love to get here, but negative helps us know where we're missing a point or missing something that we could improve.
Yeah. So head over to reliability.fm and let us know what you think. Give us some feedback. And so with that, Kirk, I think we'll wrap this one up.
Okay, Fred, thanks for having me on.
All right. Talk to you later. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.